don't know, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Coogan. That is the Chris Green Quartet. Chris Green was on the show, I don't know, a few weeks ago, talking, a month ago, 2 months ago, I don't know, 3 months ago, talking about jazz, and was I was so inspired by the nice things he had to say about the other three members of his quartet. I said, hey, why don't you all come in here? And Chris, as being the name behind the quartet, said, well, do you want us to come in here and play? And I said, it'd be 10 o'clock at night. No, you don't have to play. You should play in clubs. It's my great pleasure to welcome the other three members. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hey, good to see you.
I'm good. Thanks for coming back. Damian Espinoza is the pianist and keyboardist. Mark Piane, right?
Piani.
Plays double bass, and Steve Corley is the drummer and percussionist. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
I have to ask you, first of all, and it's inspired by having Joe Siegel on here last week, who has devoted, 70-plus years to bringing jazz to people. What brought you to jazz?
Who wants to go first?
I guess I'll get my answer out of the way. I'm going to say, I was brought up kind of in a musical household. I mean, my grandfather was a jazz pianist.
Oh, wow.
Actually a jazz and classical pianist. And my father's just he was just a all-around music buff. I mean, he listened to some of everything. But, he played the Giant Steps. He played Dave Brubeck. I mean, he was at each end of the spectrum. So even when it comes to jazz. So I became a fan of jazz at a very early age. I just liked the music.
Yeah.
And, my mother's side of the family, they were kind of the instrumentalists. So my uncle, he played drums. So I kind of followed behind him.
When did you pick up your first drumstick? Probably like everybody picked up drumsticks when they were
one.
If you could get them,
exactly.
You'd bang them.
Definitely everybody did. But my mother says about three, four years old. I was told stories. I used to sit under the table with two screwdrivers and use the table legs, different timbres on the table legs, and that's how I started, man. Even though I scarred up the floor underneath the table, but that's how it all started.
I'm sure your parents are proud of you now.
Of course. So it all, messing those tiles up, kind of made it.
New table with all the money.
Right, definitely. So that's pretty it. That's really how I got into jazz and how I remained to this.
Wow, and it's your life now. Damian, how about you?
I came up playing classical piano, kind of learning traditional piano method, and went to school for classical piano performance. And somewhere in the middle there of playing, I just started listening to jazz, and I got really interested in the small group bands and that kind of experience. And I didn't want to do anything else after I heard. Listening to the Coltrane bands and the Miles Davis bands, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to play in those. I just lit a fire.
Yeah, it is something. There is some kind of personal fire involved because it keeps burning in you guys. You wouldn't be doing what you do now. Mark, how about you?
Well, my dad is a trombone player. He's a music teacher, actually, a fun moment that happened to me after college was I got to play in a big band with my dad.
I was
in the trombone section. I was bass. But we heard, I heard jazz from when I was born. But my dad also listened to a lot of a whole variety of music. So I remember hearing Return to Forever when I was a little kid. I remember hearing Blood, Sweat, and Tears when I was a little kid. I remember hearing Electric Light Orchestra, like all kinds of, and a lot of classical music. But Stanley Clark was actually the first kind of bass player that I remember from the Return to Forever stuff.
Sure.
And that sort of got me into thinking about jazz later on. And then I remember when I was in college, I went to college to study music, I heard My Funny Valentine 4 and More, the Miles Davis record. And I was like, I want to do that.
Wow. So all of this, and you too, Chris, I remember you telling me, but you tell the listeners again, what hooked you?
Well, really, as a saxophone player, I started playing when I was 10. And as a saxophone player, you're kind of, you have to be in the whatever jazz band or whatever stage band is, you know, in middle school or high school. And so I always enjoyed it. I always liked it. But jazz in and of itself, that, you know, for a 14-year-old kid that listened to hip-hop all day.
Yeah, right.
Old, like, old man's music. And so my various band directors were always trying him, like, check this out. Check this out. Listen to this. Listen to that. And finally, like, he laid My Favorite Thing is Coltrane on me. And it just, like, it was I can, in a weird way, I listened to, like, music that grooved and that had a definite groove, and it just hit me, and just that it made sense. You know, it was just finally something that was, like, you know, old but still sounded really, really fresh. And I was like,
yeah, okay. I get the sense just from that little bit of you four that there is actually, you may all have straight jobs in your regular life, but there is, this is now, as it was for Joe Siegel, this is now your lifetime pursuit. I mean, this is not like, hey, I think I'll try this for a while. Jazz is it, right?
It would be like, not doing it would be like cutting your arm off or something. You can't, it just is. You can't not do it.
Yeah. Plus it's a lifelong study thing. It's a, you know, it's the whole, you know, it's the journey, not the destination kind of Zen thing. It's like, you know, we're always listening to the old stuff, but we're also trying to keep abreast of any new developments or anything. You know, hey, there's a new player in town, or hey, there's a new interesting artist that's doing something that we should check out or something. We're always trying to listen to the old good stuff and the new good stuff.
And I hope saying to yourselves, he's not as good as we are, but let's go check him out anyway.
Well, right. Yeah.
These nice four gentlemen of the Chris Green Quartet are going to be on for this entire hour exploring that and exploring. You guys have been together now for a dozen years. I want to talk about how you came together and what, man, that's a long time to be together, I think. And so there's got to be some real, not just musical, but personal, you know, sort of philosophical ties. I got to read a commercial, and you got to hear a couple more commercials, and then we'll carry on with the Chris Green Quartet. You'll hear some more music too. And you're listening to this show, After Hours with me, Rick Cogan, as I explore the talent behind the Chris Green Quartet. That's Chris Green over here, Damian Espinosa, Mark Piani, and Steve Corley, all of whom have just explained why they have devoted their lives to jazz. How did you come together? You guys have been together for 12 years. Well, I know it's not your incredible good looks and personality, Chris Green.
Definitely not.
I mean, there has to be together for that time. There not only has to be a sort of shared musical taste, but a shared philosophy about actually life and music, yes?
That's a good question. I mean, what's interesting is that, like, I think, first of all, we like each other, I think, right? Most time we like each other.
Most days
we like each other. But, you know, I mean, even it's funny, like, even on the, like, minor things we disagree with, I think that helps music, because, you know, I might write something, and I always say this, like, at least when I write songs, I can come up with something pretty interesting for everybody to play, but I have a really hard time writing endings for my songs. And Mark is really, really good at, you know, coming up with an ending. Like, you know, if I could end every song with, like, shaving a haircut, I would do that. But, you know, these guys wouldn't let me. So.
Is the songwriting a collaborative process with all four of you?
Yeah, I think pretty much all of us, when we bring pieces that we've written to the group, you know, we have parts written out for everybody.
Sure,
I think we're all flexible with realizing that the other people in the group are more expert at their instrument than we are, you know, and so letting them bring their own personal flair to the part. You know, so I intentionally, like with my tunes, I'll intentionally write the harmonies to be really simplified so that I can, you know, because Damian knows a lot more about, you know, piano harmony than I do, and so he can put his own signature on it.
That whole thing, I mean, for you too, Steve, this whole thing sounds very creatively enjoyable. I mean, there may be some frustrations as there is in any creative endeavor, but it sounds like that there is an open playing field here in which you can all explore. Yeah,
it's definitely great, man. When someone says, you know, I have a new tune to bring in, you know, you're going to get a chance to, you know, create, you know, and you know what you're getting ready to put out to an audience is something that, you know, came, you know, collectively came, you know, from everybody, but a piece of that came from you, you know, your heart, you know, what you're putting out. So that's one of the most exciting parts about, you know, just putting out music, period.
And you will say, you will tell me too, that you all get along, right?
Oh, most definitely. Well, I can, you know what? I am the new guy. How long? Six, almost going seven, on 7 years?
Seven the new
years.
Guy, 7 years.
I'm still the new guy.
I was teasing him. He's quote unquote new guy. Seven years in the band. He's the new guy.
But yeah, I can't even imagine, like, I don't even know what an argument would even be like.
Wow.
You know, between us four. So we'd probably laugh. You know, it would probably be a funny thing.
They're laughing now. You know, this is, people can see you guys. This is on TV, too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess technically, Damien and I had one argument, but it involved a bottle of
famous grouse
scotch.
And we had a few drinks that night.
And it was egged on by Marcus, no help. He started the argument, then leaves to go to bed,
right,
and then
right.
we're at a friend's house.
And it was like 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock
in the morning.
That's when the best fights.
We're playing in Detroit. Right. We're playing a gig in Detroit. We're staying at some friend's house, or you know, putting us up and whatever. And Mark, you know, like Chris, you know, Damien. Chris says that Prince is a better piano player than Elton John. And then Lynn leaves or something. Or whatever.
It's an argument over Prince and Elton John.
It's not an interior, you played a lousy.
But
it was Billy Joel, by the way.
That's right. But it wasn't like, but no, usually, you know, but back to what we're talking about. I mean, you know, like, you know, Damien knows infinitely more about playing piano and harmony than I'll ever know. But, you know, it's like, you know, when I write, and at least when we write songs, I tend to write with these guys in mind, you know.
Sure.
And just sure. I try to at least write something that they'd have to, like, you know, really work on.
See, that's a really interesting aspect, that you were writing in some sense when you're creating for a larger audience, but for you guys the initial step is this audience right here.
Well, in a way it actually makes writing easier.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah.
If you can come to a piece of paper knowing kind of what tools you have at your disposal, it really makes writing
How often do the four of you get together to rehearse? Not enough.
Every 6 months?
Yeah, we actually...
Seriously, that's probably right.
This is not a joke.
We actually really? Had our first rehearsal of 2017, last month, actually?
Yeah. Cause,
wow.
Because normally we're playing and, you know...
I mean, we'll workshop new tunes at gigs.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We'll have gigs that are like kind of lower pressure gigs, but we'll bring tunes and be like, hey, let's read this or...
You're playing at this coming Friday at 7 o'clock at Studio 5, Steve Rashid's place in Evanston. And again, Chris Green Jazz is the website that will give you all this stuff. How do you prepare for a gig? I mean, are you guys self-confident enough to just say, okay, see you there?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Is it really?
And not only that, I mean, we don't make set lists. We have our tunes. You know, I don't know how many tunes we have.
Yeah.
50, 60 tunes probably.
Something like that.
And Chris just calls them. We just got to play.
When you call them based on what, Chris? I mean, based on the venue, the look of the crowd. I mean, that's a very interesting.
Kind of, a lot of it's the vibe of the crowd. If it's a more traditional stuff, like they want more swing, traditional stuff, hard bop stuff, then we've got plenty of material in that vein. But typically people know when they come see us, you know, or who have heard about us, that we dabble in many genres and feels and rhythms. So it's like we can get away with a lot more just probably by all the swath of music that we like. But yeah, we'll just kind of based on like the audience or the vibe of the audience, we'll just kind of go into like a song, and, you know, like we'll do something funky and then we'll do something kind of out or whatever. And then we'll do something, you know, Afro-Cuban or whatever. So, but just, you know, just kind of based on how we feel and the vibe of the
you do. And after the news, I want to talk about recording too, because you guys have a lot of CDs and you have formed this band and started recording in what is a strange, precarious time for the music business. I really do want to talk about that.
Okay.
But I also wanted, Joe Siegel, when he was on, so impressed me by reminding me what it means to go to a live performance. Of course, it's in his best interest. He owns a jazz showcase. He would like to fill up the club. But in a couple minutes, tell me about, too, that the unique nature of a song played live, because you guys are obviously doing some improvisation while it's happening. There is no song the same. The stage is yours. I mean, I think it goes to the point there is nothing more exciting than live music.
Yeah, I totally agree. But first and foremost, me being a drummer myself, if I want to go or do something different, I have to be confident that these guys can go with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's bad to say, but there's certain things that you can't do with certain musicians.
Sure.
They'll either freak out because you're doing something different that's not the music, but this group, we can all open up and do something. Like, I love doing things rhythmically with the music. And, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, let's go this way. Or we'll go in a whole other direction, you know, making a new part or to the music.
Well, what the audience and the crowd is seeing then is creativity in flow.
Well, that's the trust that comes with playing for so long, though, too. And I know, you know, no matter where we go, to Steve's point, wherever we go, everybody's going to follow. And we don't know where that is. We don't know where that mm-hmm. any point's going to be necessarily, but everybody's going to follow.
Wow, how exciting. How unbelievably exciting. We have another half hour with the Chris Green Quartet, which is Chris Green over here, Damian Espinoza, Mark Piani, and Steve Corley. You can go to chrisgreen.com to get some more information while you hear some news. But we'll talk about the strange recording. They have a lot of CDs, and this is a really weird, precarious time for live recorded music. When you construct a CD, you do it in a way that you want. It's like reading a book. There's a narrative drive to it. You want people to listen. There is a reason this song follows this song follows this song.
Right.
And that fascinates me now. So we'll talk about that after the news. I'm so grateful for you guys coming in. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn, and you could add play the Chris Green Quartet, whatever an Amazon Echo is. I'm sure it can do that. It's 10:30 here with the news is Roger Badish. That is the Chris Green Quartet from Appreciation, a double CD. I'm in here with Chris, Damian Espinoza, who's a pianist and keyboardist, Mark Piani, whose name I can finally pronounce, at double bass, and Steve Corley, drums and percussion. All of these guys have families. They're not like crazy, you know, drug addict jazz musicians like you have been led to believe all jazz musicians are. I was asking Joe
Thank
Siegel.
Thank you for that disclaimer, by the way. Thank you for that disclaimer.
Yeah, disclaimer. They're all family men. They're all family men.
Right.
How many CDs do you guys have?
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, you can see them and buy them at Chris Green Jazz.
Group effort. Am I forgetting Music Appreciation, the new one? So six studio releases, and then we've got like three kind of like free, we call them free bootleg, like live soundboard recordings.
Yeah.
So.
And then what? Two DVDs.
And then two DVDs.
What's the purpose of those in this chaotic recording industry age, where everything seems to be not just downloadable but being downloaded? A CD, does it not seem like some kind of, it seems like a book as opposed to an iPad, you know what I mean? How about that business-wise?
I think, I guess the way I see it, it's all marketing material to play live. I think the jazz, especially the jazz side of it, is much different than the pop, because we're all about playing live anyway. That's what we want to do. And so I think basically the album is, here's a taste of what you're going to see live. And it's to get, you know, to get more gigs. That's well, that's the way
and,
I see
and
it.
And really that's the approach that we take in the studio. But I think, I can't remember actually if we wore headphones for any of the records. Like there are kind of all of us in one room, you know, playing. So we're trying to be as live with how we perform in the studio as we would perform if we were in a club.
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, which is sort of a throwback to the way a lot of classic jazz recordings were made.
Sure. Just, yeah, just set up in the studio and, you know, play and pick the best take, you know. But to add on to what Damian's saying, like it is a market. It serves a few functions. I mean, it serves as obviously a marketing tool. Like this is, you know, this is a this. If you come,
well, it gives
see
you,
us,
I mean, with certain club owners in certain places, it gives you a certain credibility too.
Right.
Sure.
But if these guys are serious enough to go in a studio and make a CD, they're serious enough to come here and play.
Right. But I mean, it's a marketing tool. It's obviously a little documentation of that moment in the studio. It's
a calling card.
It's a business card. It's a way to probably, you know, obviously fund the next project, and also just, I mean, it's a souvenir as well, like for the old schoolers that, you know, like us that like whole albums and everything. It's also just a way of, like, you know, you play a really good show, and then they're like, I want to take some
piece of, they can't take the show home except in their memory.
Right. Well, and I think for us too, it's a snapshot of where we were, you know, at that point in our musical development as a group, you know, so it almost kind of acts as a, you know, as a piece of memorabilia for us, you know, to see where we were as a group. You know, it's funny listening back to old recordings and being like, wow, you know, I can't believe it, because we'll have tunes that we play that are from old recordings. We're like, we don't play that tune like that
anymore. Talk to me, fellas, if you could, about how you sense. Can't be just by hearing, but how you sense personal musical growth in the way you play. And you're all pretty young. I mean, you know, it's not like you're losing a step like, you know, some old baseball player or something. And do you each practice on your own a lot?
Every day.
You have to.
Every day. You have to, right? You have to. How do you see... And I guess you do hear your growth, or do you feel it too? It must be both, right?
I think I would say it's both.
Yeah.
You definitely, just, you know, to speak what Mark said, you definitely hear how you recorded something, you know, say maybe 3 years ago, and then you're playing that same tune, but we're playing it now, and it's like it's totally evolved. You know, you can hear it the same, but the way we approach it maybe totally different. And as speaking to practice, do practice. I try to practice every day. But like I said, when we're playing together, you know, if we're somewhere small and we do play in some places where we're not the focal point.
Yeah.
So that's even a form of practice, you know, myself.
Sure.
Even though they say don't practice on the audience, you're really not supposed to do that. But in a sense, when we all get together, it is sometimes we call them pay rehearsals, you know, when you're not the focal point, but you get a chance to, you know, work on some things or. So I treat that as practice as well. I mean, that's just what I approach.
And we're always like the individual practice. I think everything that we're working on individually is, you know, we're always talking about, like, well, what are you working on and what are you practicing and what are you listening to? And we're always trying to incorporate different approaches in what we do. And, you know, the best way to kind of workshop your personal growth is, you know, bring it back to the group, you know, I might not be, because I'm working on whatever I'm working on, I might not be able to hear my development as a musician, but, you know, I think I'm better able to react to or hear what they're doing, and I think I can play along a lot better, I think. So
I'm always fascinated by this too. Who were your influences? You each play different things. Who is the, you know, the god for you on the drums? I mean, or the most influential player. It doesn't have to be the god or the best one. There may be one who I perhaps have never heard of who has influenced your work. It may be someone contemporary. I don't know.
For me, man, that is really tough because, I listen to so many different genres of music. So, you know, it's a drummer for each. But I think when it comes down to versatility, I've been listening to music all my life.
Yeah.
So then now I'm really into it, and I see Steve Gadd played on it. Oh, he played on this. These are some of my, you know, favorite songs. And he played with Steely Dan, Asia, you know, things of that nature. And then you find out that, oh, this was Steve Gadd, and I never knew that. So Steve Gadd is probably one of the most influential drummers out here for newer drummers, you know, middle age, old, you know, it doesn't matter. So
he's fascinating.
So he's almost at the top of my list as far as influence.
Damien, how about you?
I can't narrow it down to one, so yeah. I got to give you three.
That's fine.
The ones that I continue to come back to, and every time I listen, it's a new song every time I find new stuff. Herbie, Chick, and McCoy, all three of those. I never get tired, and wow. And every time I listen to one of their playing, I find something new. It's amazing to rediscover songs I've listened to literally hundreds of times, and I find new stuff every time.
That's very exciting too. Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of echo those guys. It's hard to narrow it down. You know, like I said before, the bass player that got me into playing the bass was Stanley Clarke.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to have that not be one of those names, even though I would really consider him to not be an influence on my playing. Mm-hmm. On my style at all. He was the one that made me fall in love with the instrument. I think, you know, if I had to name players, you know, Ray Brown is a classic for bass. Paul Chambers. I remember I was playing a gig years ago, and there was a guy who came in to the club, an older gentleman who came into the club, and just yelled out, "Walk it, Leroy!" And I was like, what is he talking about? And so I would talk to him during the break, and he mentioned Leroy Vinegar what did he play with? The Joe Samples group.
Oh, the Crusaders.
Yeah, the Jazz Crusaders. And so I was like, who is this person, Leroy Vinegar? So I went out and I bought a Jazz Crusaders record, and I heard that, you know, and I was like, I get it now. So, you know, there's all those, you know, that groove, you know.
God, fascinating. Chris, how about you?
Like, you know, again, hard to narrow down. I'll say that I've been on a huge Lester Young kick lately.
Sure.
It's pretty much been like a whole year. And he's somebody I come back to because he's pretty much the root of all of my favorite tenor players. Pretty much all meet at him or Coleman Hawkins. And so typical jazz education more or less starts at, you know, the bebop era, like Charlie Parker. Who's obviously a dominant influence.
Sure.
But he had his influences too, and they were, you know, Coleman Hawkins, Don Byas, you know, and Lester. And so I found myself really trying to address that fundamental stuff because then it just enhances my overall understanding of my, you know, the Branfords and the, you know, and the Joe Hendersons and the Sonny Rollins, you know, all those guys who they all intersected, these, you know, the older guys.
You guys are so thoughtful and interesting. We have a little quick commercial, then we'll come back and we'll see what the future holds for the Chris Green Quartet, other than a story in the Chicago Tribune sometime in the next few months. Welcome back. I have about 3 or 4 minutes with the Chris Green Quartet, which is Chris Green, Damien Espinosa, Mark Piani, and Steve Corley, who have been, I think, really incisive and smart about why they do what they do. You will play jazz forever. Will you play jazz as you see it forever with one another? You guys seem to really get along. I mean,
I don't have any plans to not play with you guys.
neither do I.
Okay. Whew, thank you.
I can't see us not playing together, really. I mean,
well, because I would think, you know, that whole sort of the creative, you've only been at 7 years, you guys are 12.
Yeah, the new guy.
The creative energy doesn't wane. It's not as if you're going to say, well, you're playing the same as you did 5 years ago. I mean, you're all out doing your own things, too.
Right.
And you bring to, because you all have your own lives, you know, whether it involves wives, kids, other jobs, you bring that to the party.
I think
so to speak.
I think what also helps, at least I mean, we, like I said before, we genuinely like each other.
Yeah.
But I think why probably why people tend to respond favorably to what we do. One of the things I think, aside from the music, is the fact that they, I think they see that we like each other and they see that we're enjoying playing. Sometimes if you go see some jazz bands, you go and it they're making great music, but it doesn't always look like they're having a good time.
Right.
And I have a good time with these guys. You know, most of the time I can hang musically. Sometimes they're thrashing me around the room, but it's always a learning experience, you know.
I think people can hear it too. They might not be able to articulate it.
Exactly.
You know, but they can hear that there's a, you know, there's a cohesion. You know, that we're enjoying what we're doing. We're enjoying each other's company on stage.
You've got a great website, Chris Green. You can go to chrisgreen.com to learn more about this Friday show and other upcoming shows and get, it really is a great, you can buy the many CDs of the quartet. You can see some video. You can see some pictures. You can get a real handle on these guys. I could not be more impressed by your music. Chris gave me, like, I don't know, extra CDs the first time he was in here, and I've been listening to him.
Anytime anybody says anything nice about me, like, here, take them all. Thank you, sir.
Well, I cannot, though. The great joy for me, though, will be to see you play live. Just after hearing the way you think and the way you feel, that's what I want to do. So, merry, merry, happy, happy, and all that jazz. And I will see you in the soon. We're going to play, I want you to hear... What cut are we going to play, Chris?
This is a Firecracker. This is a cover of a Martin Denny song filtered through the Yellow Magic Orchestra band of the 70s.
This is, instead of hearing just snippets, this is the Chris Green Quartet.
Thank you.
the Chris Green Quartet. They were all in here. Chris Green, Damian Espinosa, Mark Piani, and Steve Corley. They'll be in Evanston on Friday night. Just go to chrisgreenjazz.com. Brett, thanks for engineering. Lise, the world's greatest producer. Carl Amari is coming up, and I will see you next Sunday for another abbreviated show. Then I'll be off for the rest of the year. Isn't that weird? No show on Christmas Eve. No show on New Year's Eve. But happy holidays.